I did such a dumb thing yesterday. I decided to read some hateful messages. I was like, okay, I don't know why. I just every once in a while they get you. You're like, okay, I read one. And right as I'm reading it, my laptop froze. And it just stuck up on the screen, hating me for like a good 3 minutes as it just stared at the mean message. So subscribe, review, leave all your nasty notes or your good ones. I would appreciate it. Okay, so it's a big night for the Toronto Maple Leafs. I think that we tend to overdo the measuring stick game, but Florida is now the measuring stick game. And as much as I don't really care too much about taking these big grandiose takeaways from regular season games, especially when maybe Matthews is going to play, we're going to find out how his body responds today. So that's what we're waiting on. How will he respond? Trying to get his legs back. He just had his first team practice. So maybe it's not going to be taking everything that we see tonight and trying to superimpose it into what will be a playoff game. But there is something that we've said about this team consistently every single season, that they've gotten bounced in the first round facing either the Boston Bruins or the Tampa Bay Lightning. And that is, hey, you can control your destiny when it comes to this playoff format. You can win more games in the regular season. And as good as they have been in regular seasons, and as much as we have celebrated their success there, whether it's been individually or some of the team numbers that they've put up, they've never finished first in the Atlantic. And it's been something that people have pinned on them, something that people have mentioned about them. And here they have this real opportunity against the Florida Panthers team that has lost a bunch of games. The Leafs should be coming in here heavily motivated, not just because of the standings, not just because of that past history, not just because the Florida Panthers bounced them from the postseason a couple of seasons ago, but because they're bringing a goaltender into town who I hope deep down thinks he's better than the goaltender that's across from him occupying that net. Because they do have a defenseman in Oliver Ekman-Larsson that's going to eat a ton of minutes, that just won a Stanley Cup with that team, and Steven Lorenz, who left them to go join his boyhood team. So I'm excited for this one tonight. This would make it, I think, 8 of their last 9 would be victories. And to do it and to do that against the defending Stanley Cup champions is an early statement. Another early statement is having Ailish Forfar on the show. Good morning, Ailish. Great to have you.
Hey, was it my hateful messages that you
probably
froze on when I told
honestly,
you I had a dead appointment and I couldn't come in?
Yeah. Well, it didn't matter anyways because I woke up with a sore throat and couldn't come in either. So that would have been crap
out
if you were supposed to come into the studio.
If I waltzed in to surprise you and you weren't there.
Yeah, that actually would have been funny. That would have been good. Yeah. So it
just
is the quarter mark.
All 9 of your staff members, all your staff members that work on the JD Bunkus podcast.
All the boys. You know what though? I only one of them has to come in if I do the show from home, because I only need one guy that's on the board. And the boys are such grinders. Oftentimes they still all go in. They love each other.
Yeah, they want to get the pictures off. Like, you should see Armin when we go to a Leafs game. He's got to get a pick off in the in the fit in the box with Bonesy and Ralphie. He loves a good fit pick.
Oh, I'm aware. He loves tight shirts and fit picks. Like, there is nothing that lad loves more than a tight shirt and a fit pick. So I want to do quarter mark grades with you. Everybody does them. And whenever I read them, I'm like, I want to do mine, but I don't write them out. Actually, I do for this exercise, but I don't put them on a website. I don't put them up for sportsnet.ca. I'm saving them for my show. So the way I'm going to do this, the way that I figured that it's going to run smoothly, is if I do, I've got categories for each of these players or kind of what group they're in. And then I'm going to run down their grades and you stop me if there's someone that you want to have a conversation about, or if you think that the grade is either too high or too low, and basically be the person that you're like my TA here. Where I'm like, what do you think about these grades? And you tell me if you think that they're there, because I'm assuming that you have your own as well. And so that you'll maybe have a hard departure, or that there's a couple of these guys that you want to stop and have a little chat about. Okay.
Yeah. Both my parents were teachers. So we'll see if I have the marking gene, you know? Yeah.
We're
trying to live through them right now.
I actually, when I was doing this, was thinking, I would have been a good teacher.
We'll see by the end.
I would have been harsh but fair, but I would also be the person who, like, I would be the teacher that, like, do they get to edit like papers the same way anymore, or is it all done digitally? Like,
because it was half of the fun of now.
Yeah, half of the fun of being a teacher though would be like circle, circle, circle. Like, what is this?
You write a note. What are you thinking?
Exactly. I would have loved to. Oh my god, to break out the red pen and start circling mistakes would be just basically a lifelong dream of mine. Okay, so category one, the Keeners. Okay. Category one is I'm going to do category one is not going to be the Keeners. Category one is going to be incomplete. INC. Okay. So basically the note is please make an effort to attend more class.
They didn't attend enough class. They had mono. They missed the first semester.
100%. In this group, I have Hockenpah, Dewar, Minton, Grabenkin, Steves, and also Austin Matthews. Now he has 13 games played.
Oh, interesting.
But when he was healthy, I don't know if he was fully healthy. This is like a lingering issue that he's been dealing with. Mm-hmm. I don't think that he really looked himself. If I do give him a grade by his standard, it would be a C+. He would be one of the most disappointing guys to me on the team, despite some of the goal numbers, despite some of the, you know, being fine. It has not been the regular Austin Matthews. So I would give him by his standard a C+, by another NHLer like a B-. But Austin Matthews, I'm putting an incomplete. You think that's fair or unfair?
I get your reasoning. I will mark it fair as the TA. Can you give me those names again that are in the incomplete?
Hockenpah, Dewar, Minton, Grabenkin, Matthews. Steves.
Oh, okay.
I put Steves in there.
And what are you doing about an Alex Nylander or is he getting a grade?
I guess Alex Nylander, having played one game, I didn't even really think about putting him on the list. Same with Hildeby, who I think actually played two, I didn't even put him on the incomplete. So I did some people. Like, I did forget some people on the incompletes. They're waiting for their report cards in the mail, and it's just like they didn't come. And I'm like, oh, yeah, no, I didn't
forget
about
you. Canada Post is not delivering their mail. They're not getting their
mail. Exactly. Okay, cool. Now on to...
I agree with all
I'm going to start... Wait, do you want me to start with the low grades first or the Keeners? I think the
Let's
Keeners.
Let's go low.
First, right?
Let's go low.
Low. Oh, you want to start with the negatives. Okay.
Yeah, let's chop them down.
Okay, so then this group I have labeled as the bad boys.
Detention.
And the note is completely unacceptable. Please have your parents call me. number one, Pontus Holmberg, D+. Number two, Nick Robertson. D-. Ryan Reeves, D-. Max Domi, F.
F? Wow.
Yeah. Well, some of this is contextual. Some of this is contextual. I think for Max Domi to go this long without a point, when that is what he is supposed to provide for this team. Like, Ryan Reeves is, I don't think, an NHLer anymore. Like, he doesn't fight. He doesn't really provide anything other than the odd forecheck. He just got suspended for a bunch of games. And the reaction, I think, from most people was, oh, okay, well, now they might end up seeing a better team. And when you're looking at some of these other depth guys right now, I think, what are you saying? It's that the guys that they're replacing in Domi and Ryan Reeves have not really been noticeable losses. And so Reeves, I think, is kind of an easy one. But Domi, the reason why I marked him so harshly is because he makes money on this team. Like, he got a contract extension. Yeah. There are expectations with Max Domi. I'm a more harsh teacher to students that I think should be performing better. And for Max Domi, I know he has potential. He should be doing something with his life. And yet he's out in the woods smoking weed with all the fellas, showing up to class, reeking a dope, and he's just not focused, and it's not working for me. You can't have no goals at this point of the season, and I know that he's also was maybe dealing with a lingering issue. I know that there are parts of his game that are that there are like the intangible factors, but to me, those have been kind of a distraction for him this season. He has not been playing within himself. When Max Domi has been, you know, adding a layer of fighting or a layer of chippiness, to me, it's usually been a little out of control at the end of games where it hasn't really been working. He's got an opportunity to play with good players. It hasn't really worked out. When he has played down the lineup, it's been a complete, I won't say debacle, but he's been invisible. there has not been someone that can remotely drive their own line. And so, yeah, the fact that he got this contract extension and that he is a Toronto Maple Leaf, again, these are quarter marks. I still believe in Max Domi. That's why he's graded so poorly. Mm-hmm. That's why I'm really trying to get him away from all the smokers and get him back into class, get him back into some extracurricular activities, maybe get him to join something like the chess club, because I think he's capable of that. But as of right now, he gets an F. It's a harsh but true. Basically, his entire season, he had one flash with Nylander at the very beginning, and from that point forward, it has been basically nothing. And then, yeah, Nick Robertson, that, D-.
Super fair.
Yeah. So, yeah, do you think that Domi should not be failed?
I would. So he started out, what was it, like six assists in the game, in the first six games, and then didn't get a point for that 13-game stretch. Like, and I think it's, you're right, when you have to use the context of expectations. It's like, we expect way more from Max Domi. Do we expect way more from Ryan Reeves? No. So that's why Max Domi probably deserves the poorer grade. But yeah, I think that I can't disagree. He needs to get into, I joined the cribbage club in grade four. He
that's
needs to join the
amazing.
Cribbage club. In yeah. And my parents were like, you suck at math. So join the cribbage club. So we need to get Max Domi in the cribbage club.
Okay. So
yeah, it was good.
That's the solution to his ails. And then, yeah, Nick Robertson, D-, Pontus Holmberg, D+. I don't know what there is to say about Pontus Holmberg. And then
much.
Nick Robertson, especially given what he did in the preseason and all of the discussion that we had surrounding the player, for him to just not be scoring goals, to be completely snake bit. And yes, the thing is, I get he's trying, but it's still a D- because there's nothing there outside of drawing penalties, which in my opinion, oftentimes wouldn't even be called if he was a bigger player, you know, like if he was,
he might need to get transferred to a different school at this point.
He might. I think that's the thing is talking to his parents and I'm suggesting military college. this might be a place, you know, he goes and does a lot of push-ups and he gets some discipline. It might be good for him, a little bit of a change of scenery. Okay. The next category in the not doing so great is needs more work! !! Please see me after class. Okay. Yeah. Number one, Max Pacioretty, C+. Number two, Simone Benoit, C.
So this is people that are getting C's, is what we're saying.
Yeah, this is people who it's like, it's you're passing, but let's talk about how you can improve.
Where are you at with David Kampf? Is he
I forgot to put him.
He's right. Oh my god.
My grades are
he's
bad. I'm a really
school somewhere else.
Maybe I wouldn't be a good teacher, but yeah, David Kampf I would be giving a C- to.
Okay, that's
what
I was thinking.
That
was the only name that popped out. Yeah, okay. So David Kampf in this needs more work, see me after class. You know, he's been pretty solid on the PK. We know that, and the fourth line. But when he was injured, he was like, you know, he could have been in incomplete. He could have been in C+ area. So we'll give him this grade too. But the other two, I think this is a small class for a reason, because I think there'll be more people in the B to A range.
Yeah, that's it. It's a lot of B's and A's. That's the thing. That's why you making me start with the negatives makes me feel bad, because I feel like I was a really generous grader that I was really positive with this segment. And my major takeaway from doing this was how many guys I think are outperforming or at least performing up to what
the
expectation was.
So let's go to the positives then.
Okay. Well, I will just say with Pacioretty, because I don't want people to think I'm hypocritical, because he's played the same amount of games as Matthews. Okay. He's played 13 games. You could have said that he's an incomplete, but for me, there's been some good with Pacioretty, right? He has, he's laid some checks. He's been, I think, physical. He's clearly got some hockey smarts. There was a little bit of chemistry with John Tavares. I think that there is something that this player has to give. But to me, he dipped off after those first couple of games. He accumulated most of his points in two games. And then he did get injured, which to me, unfortunately, actually does impact the grade for this player, because you signed him as an injury risk. So part of the equation with getting Pacioretty was always going to be whether or not this guy should stay healthy. So he sits there at a C+. Okay. Next category, getting more positive. Better than expected! !! Good work. You should be proud. No parent teacher needed. We'll start from the bottom up. B- Bobby McMahon. Good with good players, bad with less good ones. Steven Lorenz, B, he's blocking shots. He's dropping Tim Brent references. He's got good size, good skating. It was a good signing. He clearly gets a boost here because he has the passion. Morgan Riley, mm-hmm. B, he's fine. He makes a lot of money. Expectations for him are, I think, now settling in to be realistic with this player. He's solid. It's not overwhelmingly great. He's fine. It's a B. Connor Timmins, B plus. Part of this grade mm-hmm. is expectation, but he was the kid you'd never think would graduate. And now he's getting into like a low level college, and we're putting together like real applications. And we're very proud of the growth that he has had because, yeah, he was like, when I first had him in the class, I really wasn't sure that he should be here. And then OEL is a B plus. I just think that I love the edge. I think that the puck movement for them has been sorely needed. And he has just been a fine partner for Morgan Riley. So that is the better than expected category. Any thoughts?
Yeah, I think Connor Timmins is like the star of that class for me. You know, he came out and really surprised me in terms of just being this really strong pairing option and beating out Timothy Liljegren, who had his stake in this team for a long time, right? Whether mm-hmm. it was deservedly or not. So to beat him out and to kind of solidify himself and to have, like, he makes really clear, easy decisions. That's what I like watching him. He's just like, okay, I'm gonna get the puck out of their zone. I'm like, oh, that's something you could do. Timothy Liljegren didn't do that. So I think Connor Timmins can be maybe the star of that class. But I think did you give Bobby McMahon a B minus, or did you give
B minus?
I think I would be putting him a little higher. Just maybe it's the Bobby McMatthews of it all, where he just kind of comes on and like it is the guy in those moments where you're like, oh my God, it's Bobby McMahon. I would probably put him a little bit higher in the B range. But I think it's just about the consistency. That's the thing. That there's games where, as you mentioned, he's playing really well along top line guys, but when he's not, he's a little lower down in terms of his impact. So maybe I'd bump him to a B, but I agree with your class of the B students, where you probably sat when you were a student.
I absolutely would have loved to have Bs. It was really
the detention class.
I went, like, when my dad passed and I was going through all his old stuff and I found my senior report cards, I missed a lot of class. And I texted my mom. I was like, oh my God, I skipped this much school. And she was like, yes, it was a problem. I was like, okay. So it was more to do with the amount that I was missing. Again, yeah. I do have some experience with smoking weed in the woods.
You need to go get Max Domi out of there.
That's what I'm saying. It's not impossible to get out of the woods, Max. You can get out of the woods. Okay. Next cat. The reason why Bobby, like I said, I kept him at the B minus is simply because it's like a group project thing for me, where when he's with the good groups, he's putting together great work. So I'm suspicious of how much of it was actually him.
Totally
because
fair.
When he has been with the bad groups, it seems as though he will easily join the bad groups, and all of a sudden the work doesn't go so great. So that's why his was a little bit harsher and a little bit lower, even though I am a fan of his. Okay, the Keeners. All right, so these are the stars. The Keeners. No notes needed. Yes, the A-list 4-5 group. Literally the A-list. Okay, Joe Woll, A-. John Tavares, A. Tanev and McCabe, it's a group project, but it's an A+. Anthony Stolarz, A+. Matthew Nyes, A+. William Nylander, A+. Mitch Marner, A++.
Woo, A++.
Uh-huh.
Damn. Plus. I think it's deservingly so. Because I kind of put them into my own categories as well. And other than not giving Mitch Marner A++, because I didn't think we could do that in this market, I think
I had to do it because
that you put,
I didn't want to have his parents call
stunning.
Me and be like, why didn't he get A++? I'm like, God, okay, fine. You can have A++.
You're right. He had to be the leader of the pack. It's pretty amazing. You know what the best part about it is? You got two goalies in the A to A+ range. When was the last time we could ever say that? It's been pretty remarkable, but even Joseph Woll getting an A- when it didn't feel like it might go that way is probably the most, like, the best part of this stretch here when we're going through the overachievers or the Keeners, because he we didn't know what we're to expect when he was injured. If you had told me that our quarter mark grades would have both goalies in the A to A plus range, I think we'd be very happy. But yeah, it's Mitch Marner leading the way. It's Willie and John Tavares and that D pairing that's like one of the best in the league. And then a goalie yep. tandem that might be one of the best in the league. It's pretty amazing.
That's the thing is what when I was doing this exercise that I came away with was, and again, it's the quarter mark. Okay. So I'm mm-hmm. not trying to, like I just said with the Panthers game, trying to superimpose everything into the mm-hmm. postseason. But that being said, they clearly have a legitimate shutdown pairing now. Would you want more offense from Chris Tanev and from McCabe? Sure, I guess so. But every single one of their metrics is a positive one. And if you talk about Chris Tanev specifically, I think that he just makes quick decisions. He makes great reads. He is the guy that I trust the most when he's out on the ice, not to do something stupid. How many times has there been like a circle Chris Tanev because he made a bad play for the Leafs? Like I do Leafs talk every single night. I've missed mm-hmm. one show, and we have not had one yet where Sam and I went, hey, by the
Don't
way,
worry, I did that show for you.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So it's like,
so between you and I, we've done every show.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just like, it's been kind of exactly what you expect mm-hmm. from this player. And then with the goaltenders that you mentioned, like Wohl gets the A-. I had to separate him in some way from Stolarz, but it's like he has a better goals against average than Anthony Stolarz. Stolarz's mm-hmm. numbers are better across the board when it comes to the advanced stuff, and he's got the better save percentage, and he's clearly the A-plus because I think that when this team was really trying to find themselves and continues to, when they're trying to score at 5-on-5 or doesn't have the power play, there's been multiple games already this season that Stolarz has, mm-hmm. I think, won for them, whereas Wohl has been more just kind of steady and not cost them really any games down the stretch. But Wohl came in, no training camp, had a couple of slow games, a couple of games that were not overly spectacular, and since then has been great and reignited the discussion about which one of these guys is actually going to be the guy. And that's under the guise of the other goaltender being an A-plus and being one of, if not the best free agent signing of his class at $2.5 million per season, being so far one of the best three goaltenders in the NHL. So, yeah, you've got one of the best three tandems in hockey. You've got two guys that you feel very, very comfortable with. And now you've got a little bit of, I would say, cushion. If it comes down to it and Wohl does get into a postseason and ends up getting hurt again, you're not going to be terrified that it's an Ilya Samsonov in net. I think the goalies thing is big. And then Marner and Nylander, to kind of focus on the two of them for like a second, Marner's on pace for what it would be his career high in points. And we have seen this mm-hmm. before where the production has dipped for him. We even saw it last year with William Nylander, where he was off to this unbelievable start, and then the point total started to level off a little bit as the season went on. It's part of the reason why I'm like very against the idea that the Leafs would be trying to sign Mitch Marner today. Like, use the time that you have to get as much information as possible is basically my argument for it. Not, hey, you're conclusively not signing him, which I don't understand that position either. But Nylander, to me, has actually been kind of a bit of an underrated story this season. Like, he's tied for third in the NHL in goals. He clearly can drive his own line. Like, out of all these players that we've discussed this year in terms of who they should play with, and Marner playing with Matthews and Marner playing with Tavares, the one commonality with
you never
Nylander,
have to worry about where Nylander plays, you know?
Correct.
He can just play, no worries, I'll play here, I'll do this, like, I'll play my game regardless of who you put me with. And that is
Pontus
like,
Holmberg.
That is a rare feat. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
If you put me with Pontus Holmberg, I'd be done.
Yeah. Yeah. You would not be performing very well. And you've seen a lot of guys not perform exactly well. So that's, I just wanted to kind of add a little bit of extra discussion to him because mm-hmm. I feel like I probably haven't talked about William Nylander enough on this show. And if there's one thing I got to say so far through the quarter mark is last year, there was a lot of discussion about his contract, specifically in regards to him and Pastrnak and him getting like 1% or less than 1% higher of the cap percentage when it came to his contract, right? Because we all understand mm-hmm. the numbers go up, and what you really have to look at is the cap percentage of when guys sign. And Nylander's, despite people understanding that he needed to get paid, I thought it was a valid criticism to say, how is this guy getting a higher cap percentage than David Pastrnak? And I would be lying if you weren't worried at all that after signing the contract, there would be a little bit closer to the guy that you like played for the Leafs before last season, who was a good player, but I wouldn't argue was this player. And so for William Nylander, like, he is absolutely living up to the expectation of this contract. I think that saying to exceed it is strong just because he is paid like one of the top guys in the entire NHL. So I don't think that you're getting like wins over replacement with this contract, but Nylander's been brilliant. And to be independent of where you put him and to allow what I think is going to be flexibility moving forward here of having him on a third line, like that is super, 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 super meaningful to me. So those are the keeners. Those are the people that have it. You and I didn't really disagree on grades.
No, I think it's pretty fair. I think there's the thing that's the most evident is I think there's two separate like classes. There's the community college and then there's the Ivy League at this point with this team. And I think that's the thing that might be the thing that you want to continue to keep an eye on. Like how many more of those D, C guys can get into the B plus range. And I think that's where things in the past and the playoffs will bite you again, where are you getting that secondary depth that two different teams, team A, team B, I know Kipper and Bourne talk about it all the time, but there shouldn't be such a chasm between the classes. And so I would be concerned about getting some of those guys in the D grades into C's by the next time we do this in halfway marks. And then can they make their way into, you know, the B grades where you're feeling comfortable about them being on the ice? They're not a minus. They're not something that's like depleting the team's energy. That's the main focus. But to have so many guys in the A range is pretty great. Like, I mean, that's why the Leafs are top of the Atlantic. That's why they've gone so successfully without Austin Matthews. I think they deserve a lot of credit for being able to elevate. I mean, Mitch Marner with his A++, but being able to do this without Austin Matthews in the lineup, like, I think it would have been an easy excuse to drop three or four of those games and you not have the guy that is your best player. But they are shouldering a lot and deservingly getting great grades. So I think we did well as professors today.
I think so too. And what put the Marner thing over the top for me with the A++ is not just the added ice time. It's not just the you know, penalty killing and the defensive stuff. It's that I saw a stat yesterday that Mitch Marner leads the NHL in minutes played against the toughest competition. Like hockey's version of football's DVOA statistic, he is at the very top of that list. So not only is he performing this well, he's doing it in difficult matchups night in and night out. And tonight, if there continues to be no Matthews or if there is no Matthews, it's going to be, I think, pretty fascinating to watch how the Panthers play against Mitch Marner and what he does against that team, who to me is going to still represent the biggest possible test come playoff time. So yeah, those are the Leafs grades. So any Leafs topic you want to hit with me, because I do want to move on. I got a question for you about the PWHL and then I want to do an A-list.
No, I think we covered it. All good.
Okay, good. Here's my plain and simple question about the PWHL. Everyone understood what the goal was last season. And our mutual friend Haley Salvian, I think, wrote a really good piece that's up on The Athletic right now discussing, you know, what types of successes they hit, all the sellouts that they had, all of the momentum that was behind the league. This year they come in and there isn't the newness to the PWHL, right? It isn't the, hey, there's a novelty to going to these first games. Hey, you're not beating the sellouts that you got last season, right? Like the numbers that you hit are full big stadiums that you can be playing in. And so to you, what is the goal for the league as a whole this season?
I think that's a really great question that I think a lot of people have asked me this, like when I've been on their shows, because it's so easy to get excited about the first time this, the first time that. I think the goal of this campaign is to showcase that this league got even better in the offseason, is going to continue to get better, almost to a fault where there's only six teams, right? And we had to have a bunch of retirements and a bunch of people, they just had their waivers and their tryouts kind of end yesterday. There's a bunch of people that have had to end their professional hockey careers early because the league is so strong. People that probably would have played for another 3-4 years if it was the CWHL, if they had the two leagues previously. I think this year we'll see that the level of play is going to be even more surprising, I think, to fans that maybe caught a couple games last year or have caught a couple of the international rivalry series games. I'm really excited to watch these stacked rosters. Like, that's the best way I can put it. There's no fluff. Not that there was fluff last year, but sometimes I would watch and be like, I could maybe make a fourth line. Like, no, there's none of that anymore. The girls that came out of college, the girls that have come from overseas, some of these free agent signings, teams are really, really cutting out any of the fat that there might have been in the past where people were kind of holding on to a career and wanting to play one season. There's none of that this year. Really hard decisions, I think, were had to have been made for the six teams. I think the push that kind of came out about 2 weeks ago where they said we're going to expand next year, I think that actually surprised a lot of people because I think the plan was maybe a year after that. But the fact of the matter is, like, people are – there's too many good players right now to play in this league. And so expansion probably needs to happen sooner than they anticipated because there are players that should still be playing that unfortunately either had to retire or not make a team, which is pretty hard because the whole point of this is to grow the game, right? And you want to keep playing. So I think the goal of this season is, hey, can you build on the first of this and the best of this from last season and show players and show teams and show fans that this is truly the best collection of girls hockey that we've probably, women's hockey we've ever seen. I'm really looking forward to it. I think some of these teams have a lot of young youth. And I think you'll see what, if you watch any of these games for those listening, there'll be some new faces that are just come out of college that are going to be staples of the national team for either the USA or Canada moving forward or even internationally. And you get to see them right away. You don't have to wait for this period of time for them to go play and get centralized by the Olympic team. Like, they'll be on the ice in Toronto or wherever your city is. So I think the hockey is going to be even better. The rule that they introduced, and I don't know if you talked about it on your show, to try to drive more offense. It's because you and I were betting the unders and bankrupting all the betting
what
companies.
A run.
But that's man, I'm a little upset that they caught on because we were paying rent. I think that's the one thing that they got to figure out. There's so much talented offense, but the goalies are just like the six best goalies in the world. So that's where these rules come into play where they're like, let's try to get creative. Let's try to drive more offense. So I think they need to make the games a little bit more explosive. And so that might be with some of these new rules that might be trying to drive more offense, but a 1-0 game is exciting, but not every game can be 1-0, you know, like I think that that's where we want to see a little bit of difference. So being creative and trying to be innovative is great that the PWHL is doing that because they kind of have that opportunity. The NHL can't just be like, here's a new fun rule because everybody would rip them apart.
So I think that's actually that's a real point of fascination for me because a lot of people that I spoke to last year had mentioned this to me that at the bottom of the rosters, there were a lot of players that saying they don't belong is harsh, but that the talent discrepancy was large and that as the years went on, you were going to start to see stronger crops of players, better groupings of players, a deeper league just in general, line to line to line, where it didn't feel like, last year's Toronto team, top two lines going out, caving people in. Rest. Yeah. You would see just like you could just tell, like, again, even being there, holy crap, the difference between people who are part of their national programs versus people who are at the very bottom of these rosters. My only thought about it is for a league that is really struggling to find offense, having it now also be deeper, I'm like, is that going to create more scoring or is that going to create even less opportunity to score now that you are throwing your top lines out there on the ice and they're going to be playing better players?
I think that's like the catch-22 of it all, right? You want this to be the best league in the world, which it is. And it's undoubtedly going to be full of unbelievable talent. But, you know, there isn't like the NHL where there are some of those teams where you're like, do we need to expand? Because the product is getting saturated. Like when they add another team every year or they want to add another team, I'm thinking like, I don't know, like, I don't want to be watching a team where I don't know anybody's name in the NHL. And you're not going to get that with the PWHL. If you're a women's hockey fan, you'll know these girls just came out of college or they've been in the program or they played here. So yes and no, I don't think it's going to help drive more offense. I think that's why they had to make some rule adjustments because you're having three really strong lines, maybe even four. And so where's the weakness? It's going to be some of these rules. It's going to be with, you know, trying to be innovative. But I would think in the first couple of years, I'm okay with it because if they expand, let's say next season for the third year, then we'll see, okay, two more teams pull so much of that talent out. It'll kind of even itself out. I hope at least. So I'm eagerly looking forward to the expansion and how that'll change things. But this year with six teams, like if you look at the rosters, like it's really hard to make preseason predictions because they're all really good. Like they all have solid goalies. They have two amazing lines. They have awesome goal scorers. They have people that have won the Patty Kaz for best college player. They have Olympic gold medalists. They have international gold medalists. You're just like, where is the weakness? So that'll be where coaching comes into play. So I think really, if you're looking at trying to find the upper edge, it's teams like Toronto, whose head coach is the Canada head coach, who has a lot of Canadians on his team, who got that extra couple years of working and molding his players, versus a team that might have a little bit of growing pains at the start of the season. Like that's maybe the only places I see where teams have huge advantages is off-season moves, their draft, some of these young girls, and coaching, because every roster you could pretty much give, if we were giving grades, they'd all be the B to A range. Like there's nobody that's got a massive deficit.
Okay. So you and I, for a very long time when we did shows, we always did the A-list, which is you preparing kicker stories. Let's get into it because I know you got to run. You've got a dentist appointment. I have one for you as well, except for, I don't know if we'll have time because we're running out of it.
But you so want to go first
with yours. Okay. Well, mine is simply,
you go first.
Okay? All right, so welcome to the A-list. We don't have the drop. So welcome to the A-list. Mine is actually about wine lists. So I don't know really anything about wine. Some things I like, and I know some regions I like. But so Saturday night, I'm on a date, and this happens all the time, where I'm like, okay, you can choose the wine because, like, you might be more invested in it. But when you're sitting there, you don't know anything about wine. You're kind of like, you feel like a little boy. It's very much like you standing there and the server is going like, and here's what I think. And
what
they're basically, they're noting some of the qualities of the wine, but I don't really follow too much of it. And I'm kind of like nodding my head, holding the menu, being like, that sounds great. And what always ends up happening is I settle on an expensive, like a really expensive bottle of wine because I'm like overcompensating being like, I guess like if you're telling me that this one's going to be more, then I end up doing it. And so this is basically a question of one, at what age do you think you just have to know a little bit of something about wine? Because I think I've skyrocketed past that age. And now I'm like, I think I should need to take like a class. I think I need to learn either like one or two things. Or what is your like go-to tip for someone? Because you're like a wineries person, like you're a wine person. So it's like,
I would say as somebody, so I just turned 30 and I've gone on a bunch of bachelorettes now and I've gone on a bunch of like wine trips.
That's what I'm saying.
And that's the only time I ever learned about wine. I'll be honest. Okay. Like I didn't know jack about wine and I still don't. But I have like a built-in question, like, do you have something that's dry or not sweet? Like, I know that I don't like sweet wine and I don't like something I guess I'd like something that's dry. If I'm like, I like red.
Sure.
If I like red wine, I usually like a Pinot Noir, let's say, if I'm going to dinner. I just know the type of wine. And then I'll say, can you show me your Pinot Noirs? And then I'll pick like the second cheapest one because you don't want to pick the cheapest one. Because I'm not a monster. Yeah. And I'll say, okay, so if I like Chardonnay and I like Pinot Noir, I'll say, show me those ones. What do you like? And then they usually show you a few and I just pick the second cheapest one because the cheapest one, the waiter's looking at you like you're a joke. And if you pick the most expensive one, it's like, whoa, who do you think you are?
You're a sucker.
But the worst, you're a sucker, like me. JD, the worst is when they come and they ask you to taste, to try it.
I know.
That's what I think you should take lessons on because you can look like such a fool if like they're like swirling it and you're like, this is nice. Like you don't know what the hell you're looking for. So, but you can take those lessons, which would be like the most pretentious thing I think you could ever do, JD, but I think it might help you
on
your dating
life.
I can see you there.
Whenever they bring the bottle over for the testing and I taste it, I have never once been like, send this back. This is not what I expected. I'm like, oh my God.
What are you supposed to say?
No, I go, this is perfect. Thank you so much.
The best wine I've ever had.
Yeah, exactly. Even though 99% of the time I'm like, this tastes like probably... It would have been tasting the exact same as had I just gotten anything else. Had I gotten that cheaper bottle. Okay. You want to do one or you got to go?
No, I can do it. Well, you got to take a break after me or?
Yeah.
I got a couple more minutes. Okay.
Okay, go.
Okay, cool. Okay, so I saw this. This is like a, it's about disappointing your parents. So maybe we could both get in there. I was reading this article. There's this Kansas college football player who's born in Australia. And he's the punter for Kansas. He's a sophomore.
Okay.
And so his family is like 10,000 miles away from where he plays college football. So they flew to the United States to watch him play his first ever like college football game. And they're all excited. And he didn't get a single punt in the entire game. He sat on the bench for 60 minutes. And unfortunately, like just offensively, like it, they just didn't, they scored on, you know, seven of their eight drives and like they didn't get an opportunity to punt. But family travels all the way around the world, did not witness a single punt. They did win. But like, I just thought about, I mean, first of all, if your son's a punter, maybe like that's problem number one.
That's part of the deal. Yeah, that's part of the deal.
That's part of the deal. But like this, the feeling of like coming off the ice or the bench or the field and like seeing your family, like I can remember many times of just like feeling like the sports disappointment, I think is the deepest disappointment that I've ever felt with my family.
So I never had sports disappointment with my parents where I felt like, because I wasn't as good of an athlete as you, where I would let them down from necessarily like not performing well enough, because I don't think that they really cared. My dad definitely did more, especially with basketball, of like me playing well. But to me, when I think about like when I really disappointed them, was that I was a hothead. And so I'd get ejected from certain games, or like the worst one that I remember is once I was playing a hockey game and I didn't think that any family member was at the arena. And I broke a stick.
Punched somebody.
No, I broke one of my sticks over the post.
That's expensive.
And I look over into the corner right after I break the stick, and my like in his 80s year old stoic leader of the family grandfather is standing there, my Latvian grandfather, looking at me as I shattered a stick and just threw a temper tantrum.
Oh, no.
And I just remember the look that was in my dad and his eyes, and it just immediately sobered up all my rage, and I felt like the world's biggest clown. And that was like my number one moment of disappointment, where I just knew that after the car ride was going to be so quiet, and that when my dad got me alone, I was going to be getting like a very, very stern talking to, which I absolutely did. So for me, it was like always about losing my cool, not about like whether I missed shots or let in goals.
I remember, and so I used to play boys, like I was playing boys AAA growing up.
Yeah.
And I would tuck my ponytail into my gear because I wanted nobody to know that I was a girl. Obviously they knew I was a girl.
You were like Icebox in Little Giants.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And like, nobody knows I'm a girl. They totally know I was a girl. And I used to play defense when I played boys. And then I moved to girls. When I moved to girls, I played four because I was like, screw this. I hate defense. But I remember my dad would say, okay, so if you're having a bad game, or like you did something wrong, I'm going to stand. This is so silly. I'm putting him on blast. I'm going to stand in the stands. And and I'm going to have my hands like on my head, like kind of like, you know how you rest them. And I remember this one game. It was like, it's so embarrassing. I think I got a penalty, and it was a stupid penalty. Like whether I tripped someone or I was late to the play. And this was like Tyke or like Adam. I don't even know. And I remember looking up and my dad is right across from the penalty box with his hands on his head. And he stood there for like 20 minutes. And I think I cried. Like, I think I cried in a box. I was so embarrassed. And like, I also was trying to not be like the tough boy. Like I was not, I didn't want anyone to know I was a girl. And I think I was crying in the box. Yeah. And then I had to like go back on the ice and like, and I could just see, I can see his like searing image in my brain right now of his hands on his head. And then I laugh like 30 and I'm like, you guys were insane. Like hockey parents are nuts. Like that my dad would do that. Like I knew I was having a bad game. I knew I shouldn't have tripped the guy in the corner. And to see him standing there with his hands on his head, like I'll never forget that. It was like gut wrenching. And then I'm never getting penalties. Like my whole career, I was like, I'm never going to be the person that gets penalties. I think it scared me from getting penalties. So it worked, but it was devastating.
Oh my God. Next time you're in studio with me, I'm 100% going to start standing.
Put your hands on your head. I might just cry immediately if I see it.
Yeah, no, actually, never mind. I'm not going to do that at all. Ailish Forfar, we can listen to you later today after your dead disappointment on the fan pregame. Yes. Thanks as always for making time.
Fresh teeth.
We'll talk to you soon.
Of course. Yes, fresh we'll talk soon. Bye, guys.
All right. Thanks, Ailish. Bye. All right. Quick break. Come back and discuss the sweepstakes that I for the rest of my life, I will never understand.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
So we've got a slate of NFL games tomorrow, and that's the way I would describe it. It's a slate. I guess Dolphins, Packers, we're all going to be waiting for. Giants, Cowboys. Woof. That is an ultimate woof. The only thing that would have made that game somewhat interesting is if Daniel Jones would have gone to the Dallas Cowboys. But this is the sweepstakes that I was talking about that I just do not understand, is that there seems to be like a real demand for Daniel Jones, which to me tells you about the state of quarterback play in the NFL, but that this guy is putting out like real demands for the places that he wants to go to. Guy wants to go to a contender, and good for Daniel Jones. He's good to do whatever he wants. I just can't tell if this is a situation where quarterbacks are now just so famous in football that we're genuinely interested in like all of them. Like I think it was you, Mike, that like our producer, Mike Jose, put in our email to start this week, like about the Gardner Minshew injury. And he asked me, he's like, do you think Gardner ever plays again? I'm like, listen, who cares? It's Gardner Minshew. What do you need to see more from Gardner Minshew's career? Is there something that, you know, he's leaving meat on the bone? Who cares? Who cares? You want to see him play quarterback? I don't care if he's lovable. He could be a fine, lovable backup who does his I have a mustache routine during the offseason, like during training camp. Put him in a Hard Knocks. I don't know. It's just very strange that we care about so many quarterbacks, and especially the ones that are terrible. Like, again, for Daniel Jones to put a list of the things that he wants makes sense to me. Except for a contender, why would they be wanting to sign you exactly? Like, why would you want to sign there? Like, you don't want to play? You want to be a backup? Wouldn't you want to go somewhere where maybe you are going to get a shot, an opportunity to actually start games? I'm not really understanding the premise here. And then the second part of it is, who has seen any of Daniel Jones and thought, like, we got to bring this guy in the building at the beginning of December, essentially? What is that doing for you? People were always, listen, not to overly politicize this, but like people have always been afraid of certain players. Like, think about Colin Kaepernick with like, oh, it's a distraction. Like, is this not somewhat of a distraction? Is the juice worth the squeeze? Like, bringing in Daniel Jones, who people are going to want to talk to, and how about his situation in New York, and comes with some of the controversy, and I don't know. I don't really understand anything to do with the Daniel Jones thing to me, because he just stinks. He got a huge, huge, huge runway to figure out what he was as a player, and we found out pretty much at every turn that he was no good. So again, the question is, who cares? Quickly, before I take the break, I also want to do one more football thing here, which is, it's a pet peeve of mine, and it's been a growing pet peeve, because I've seen a lot of people recently either writing articles or having these big takes about running backs in the NFL and how the good teams appreciate having good running backs, and it's all the idiot teams that aren't paying the running backs, and go on down the line. And I can't help but think, okay, when was this actually not true? Like, when was this the case? Because are we trying to make a situation where we're saying all of a sudden running backs are going to get paid differently? Because I don't think that that's happening at all. I think that there's a 0% chance that we really see the market for running backs change in a material way. A lot of teams could have had Saquon Barkley. A lot of teams could have paid up for Derrick Henry. They didn't do it because the market for these guys has essentially been set. And when it comes to the idea of like, look, these are the leading rushers. Okay, for sure. Jacobs, Henry, and Saquon, what do they all really have in common? Give you a second. They left horrible teams and they went to good teams. This is what good teams do. Good teams add luxury pieces. Good teams add good players at positions that they normally wouldn't spend the high draft picks on. Are we trying to say that it makes sense now for a bad football team to draft a running back high? Like, are we going back to this? Like, no. Why did the Lions draft Gibbs? Because they felt like they were really taking a step and that they were in a spot where they could take a player like that. I don't get this. Like, Jacobs, did anybody say Jacobs, Henry, and Saquon should be staying in their respective destinations? No. Giants fans are the ones that are the most upset about it, but it, like, okay, what would Saquon have been on this Giants team? Is he really changing the ceiling of the Giants? No, they would have just been a bad football team, and we would have lost the end of Saquon's career. So to me, like, nature is working perfectly here. Good running backs on bad teams, you should leave. They're not going to get big contracts because there still is a heavy risk development element that is involved with these guys. And yeah, good football teams historically, like the, say, the 49ers or the Texans this year, who thought that they were going to be taking a step and grab Joe Mixon. Teams in those spots build up, and then they don't build up using the running backs, and then they go and usually acquire them when the team is assembled. So to me, it's like kind of a bit of a non-story that has gotten just a long, long, long runway in terms of discussion. And I think it's kind of a little asinine. Anyways, let's take a quick break. Let's come back and let's talk to Brian Boyle. All right, monster game tonight. Leafs talk right after the game. As always, subscribe and review. Leafs Panthers. Two teams doing different things right now. Leafs without the guy who's their best player is in the lineup. Winning four straight, seven of their last eight, and the Florida Panthers loses their four straight. Something's got to give. Something's got to give. One team's either trending in the right direction, the other one's going the wrong one. But yeah, it's a return night for a bunch of these teams. And it's a return day for this guest, Brian Boyle, former NHL forward, NHL Network, and up in the blue seats. What's up, brother? How we doing?
Good. How we doing? Come on, Jenny.
Yeah, things are good. Things are good up here. Like, the local hockey team is
things
winning.
Are great.
And that brightens their... Yeah, things are great. Like, that's really it. There's no sun here anymore. We've completely lost the sun for the winter in Canada. But other than that, like, the hockey team is keeping people warm with, yeah, just like good play, quality wins, good goaltending, a better blue line, all kinds of different things. I want to dig into some of it with you. But I want to start with this, okay? Because you're a guy who's done the returns. So tonight, OEL, Stolarz, and Lorenz, they're facing a team that they just won a cup with. I'm curious what that is like. And also, which was your tougher return game? Because I know you really love Tampa, but you are, to me, always a Ranger. But, like, do you remember your first game back with either of those teams more specifically? Like, which one of them was bigger for you?
Well, so the one in New York was cool, but it was a little easier. I returned with Tampa, but I also had Ryan Callahan and Anton Strahlman with me, and it was all three of our first game back in New York. So that made it a lot easier. The more difficult game was being on the Leafs going back to Tampa just a couple weeks after I was traded. But just in terms of just being around and, you know, my wife and son were still like in Tampa. It was an odd sort of dynamic. But it also, when the game started, I wanted to win that game so bad that it was, you know, it is what it is, but I was angry that, you know, I got traded because, you know, you're happy you get to go somewhere for a playoff push, but I was like, I can't believe they got rid of me. So it's not easy by any stretch, but it's easy to get motivated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I would imagine. So, like, you just said that the thing about the teammates, right? Hey, I was playing with a couple of other guys that I had played with on this team, and so that helped make things easier. So I'm going to take that and put it on the Leafs tonight, where it's like those three guys are all playing together. There's going to be some kind of added kinship to this game, you think, for Ekman, Larson, Stolarz, and Lorenz?
Yeah, and you know what? When it happens in the offseason, too, you have some time to process all of it, and you get the understanding that it's this is just dollars and cents at that point. You guys have earned, you know, more than what we are willing or able to give you. Thank you for your contribution. And it's pretty amicable usually. You know, in Stolarz's case, he's been knocking at the door. He's played good hockey for a number of years, in my opinion, and I wanted to see him get a chance somewhere where he could show what he's really capable of, and I'm really happy he's able to do that a little bit more. You know, him and Wall, like, this, you got some great goaltending for the Leafs now. It's really a luxury, but for him, it might be different. I don't know how goalies operate. I never claim to. I don't even want to know. They're out of their minds. But you know, he's had a phenomenal start. He's gotten he's on pace to play career high games and show him what you could have been missing. There's a log jam in net in Florida too, so he probably understood that the whole time. Use that to get to something else. You can kind of wrap your head around that earlier, and it's not like you want to settle down and live there the rest of your life in Florida. He knows he's gonna, if he wants to play and have a great career, he's gonna have to move on, and that was his opportunity to show some teams that he could play. With OEL, I mean, it's a similar thing too. They took a chance on him after he got bought out, right? And he did really well, and he wasn't making $8.5 million or $8.25 million. He's on a smaller contract. Expectations are down. Now he's equally as impressive in Toronto. So both like, playing with house money a little bit, and probably one of the biggest games of the season to date.
Yeah, no, I think this one's huge for Toronto. The Boston game always feels massive when you circle it on the calendar because they're the big brother here, and there's always the feeling of, oh, okay, you know, like you've got siblings, many. you always want to test yourself against that person. Like that is, you want to beat the bigger brother. You want to go and prove something to them. And that's what the Leafs, it just always feels like in those Boston games, especially when they're more physical. But Boston, yeah, they're looking like it's going to be not tough to make the playoffs, but not easy. Not as easy, not as much as in Penn as it's been in years past. And to me, the measuring stick game is Florida. Like, they're the Stanley Cup champs, and you have a bunch of their former players. There should be a little bit of added juice in this one. And, like, to focus in on the goalie thing, because, like, you mentioned, hey, I don't know maybe what they're thinking. I'll try. If I was Stolarz, I would understand all those things, and I'm getting an opportunity somewhere else, and all that's well and great. But if you look at his numbers behind Bobrovsky last year, there was a case, like, in the smaller sample, which I think was like 25 of them, he played better. And to play it over the course of an entire season versus being a backup, like they're two different things. And Bobrovsky had this unbelievable playoff run. I don't think anybody would ever be making the case that, hey, Bob wasn't the guy or that they should have gone with Stolarz. Like, no question about that. But if you're a competitor, you've made it to the NHL. You're a guy with that kind of pedigree. You're in that position. I hope that Stolarz feels like, hey, if I was in net, we also would have won a cup. Hey, if I was in net, things would have been the exact same. And what I want to show is that the goaltending here is even, that I wasn't your backup, that like I'm your peer, not in the sense that we're in the league. I'm your peer in the sense that we're at the very top of this, at the entire NHL level. And so for the teammates in this game, I would imagine that this is going to feel a little bit like when your coach faces his former team, right? Like when there's been a coach fired from a different team, that you're going to have a little bit of added juice for that goaltender. At least I would think that you would hope that as a fan. Is that true?
Yeah, no question. More so with players and coaches, but that depends on how much you really like your coach, I guess. But you're bang on because you do a lot of things for your goalie. Your goalie's bailed you out throughout the whole year. If you know you're up 3-4-0 something is late in the game, guys. You see guys block shots. That's for the goalie. You know, you don't have to risk getting injured, but you will do it to give him his shutout. He did get some time last year. He's a great goalie. I think, you know, mechanically, his size, his athleticism, an off night for him isn't as bad as an off night for maybe a smaller guy or a more, you know, explosive goalie. He just seems like he's in a lot of, he has a ton of control over what's going on in the game. And if you can play well and hard, I think the motivation up and down the lineup, regardless of if they played in Florida last year, is huge for them. Like you said, it's not a measuring stick, so to speak, but big games are, you want to play really well in big games, even in November, because it's another rep at what's it going to be like. All eyes are towards the playoffs for the Toronto Maple Leafs right now. This is the year if I'm a fan of the Leafs, I would be most excited. I watched them for maybe 5 or 6 games to start the year, and I said, it's different this year. This is a different team now. And whether that's because of, you know, who they brought in, how they're using guys, the coach, what his message is, I just, for whatever reason, think that they have it figured out now. They're going to exercise those demons. And maybe because they have some pedigree with guys in that room with rings, whether it's Berube or it's guys that they brought in this offseason that have won, I just think that's going to trickle down. Plus the motivation of falling short, whether it's their fault or not, this thing that sort of followed them around, for 6 or 7 years now, they're going to shed that. And I'm excited to see them, especially in the Atlantic this year. Boston clearly has taken a step backwards. I think Florida, the way the league works, you get penalized for having success. That's how a hard salary cap works. You can you spend a decade trying to build something, and as soon as you reach the top, you have to tear it down because of financial reasons. And you tinker with it. That's what the best GMs do. And I think Florida, by the time April comes around, they'll be dialed in as well. That'll be their biggest challenge. Carolina looks good, but this Toronto team,
yeah.
I mean, where are the holes? Where are the holes on this team right now? You lost one game without a top five player in the world in the lineup. They're deep. They got a number of different options. They're a matchup nightmare. You go on the road, they can win on the road anywhere. It's really, you know, I'm impressed. I'm impressed with the Leafs this year. Good to see.
So I agree with you. It's just that when I say it, I sound like a homer idiot, you know? Like, I say it, and people go like, oh, my God, the guy in Toronto thinks that the Leafs are going to go deep in the playoffs? Stop the presses. Unbelievable. Wow, they've won some regular season games in November, and that's what you think? What a shocking revelation for you. But a lot of what you just touched on there for me is why I think that this is a year to be really optimistic about them. To me, the whole is that they've got to improve their center depth. But that's really it right now. And that gives them a real weapon. That's a real advantage going into the NHL trade deadline, knowing like, hey, you've got the luxury of just knowing you got to add at one spot. They don't need a goaltender. You know, they're not worried about the position because they've got two guys. They're deep on the blue line. Like they're arguably seven deep, depending on what ends up happening with Hakanpaa here. And yeah, there's some guys that they even have at the AHL level that they believe in. Where at, like, yeah, you could add those depth pieces too, without a ton of cost. So center is the spot for me. But the biggest thing that I feel like I'm noticing and why it's going to be so interesting to see Matthews' return and whether he can be healthy and how he gets back in the lineup and looks, which I'm, again, it's a good question to have, is that it to me, it really does seem like there has been growth from Nylander, Marner, and Matthews. Like that these guys are clearly stepping into their primes. The numbers have always been great. They've always been exciting players. But I am seeing more dynamic, more engaged, more consistent, more dominant play from those guys. And so I guess with Marner and Nylander specifically, because they've been in the lineup for longer, and now they're like in their 27 seasons, age 26, 27 seasons, 28. Like, I guess how much of that are you seeing too? Is that something that you are seeing too? Like a material step with those key core players?
Oh, yeah. I mean, what about the noise around Marner since you lose game seven till into the season even.
Yeah.
How are we going to quiet that noise? If I'm Mitch Marner, how do I quiet that noise down? Well, he's played unbelievable. And that's the only way he could do it. That's not easy to do. And so he's, again, that's just a lot of reps of being in that market or maybe just turning the phone off or whatever it is and just focus on, hey, I'm one of the best in the world at playing wing in the National Hockey League. He's done a tremendous job this year. Nylander, I don't ever worry about. He just puts his gear on and competes regardless of what he does off the ice. I think he's unbelievable for the game and for that city. He's just so entertaining. And even Austin this to start the year, it looked like he was making a serious effort to be even more of a 200-foot player. This guy with Selke votes the last couple of years, like he's like, no, I'm the captain. I'm going to play. If he's going to score his goals, that's going to come. But he was so dedicated to shutting down whoever was coming at him as well. He's just going to get better and better at that and really round into one of the, I just think, the most complete players. He already is, but I think it's just going to get better and better. I honestly think the team, they're my pick to win the East right now, and that's pending on what they do at the deadline. You touched on that. I thought that was perfect that you just said that because that's what is going through my head and see how their deadline goes. And it's not switch out six players for six new players. I thought that was a mistake. I think unless you did that last year, the year before, but you just add a little bit. And it could be someone who doesn't do a ton, but in that one game where you really need it, it helps. And then when you move on, you might forget about it as a fan, but the boys remember that in the room. It's not going to take much to get them over the hump because what they have, their foundation, what they what they can throw out at you and the different combinations too. If it's not going well in a playoff series, they can switch things up. I just think they're too much of a handful. That's they get through the first round, I think for sure they're going to the cup final.
Yeah, dude, that's I love it. Sounds good. People here like to hear that, obviously. But yeah, that's why tonight even does feel like a especially big game, is you're sitting 3 points up on Florida. And to me, like, one of the stories of picking the Leafs for the East is, okay, do they look good? Yeah, solid. They've won all these games without Matthews. There is, like, real reasons for optimism with the growth lineup. They're getting good goaltending. They've been well coached this season. Yeah, their blue line is clearly improved. But all of a sudden, even now, like, even just, like, late November, early December, to be 22, 23 games in the season, then be 5 points up on Florida and have, you know, a game in hand on them, that feels meaningful just for their, I would imagine, their psyche of not just being in this season all year long, staring down the idea that you are 100% playing the Boston Bruins or the Tampa Bay Lightning and having your fate sealed, essentially like from this time of the year forward.
Yeah, I don't think they care. I think it's different now. Again, that's another kind of distraction. Just play. Just improve your game. Play the right way in these games. You know, you don't want to see a regression back to maybe even getting wins, but winning games with high scoring, highlight reel plays, but then big time breakdowns or getting pushed around in your defensive zone where you're getting bullied and there's scoring chances left and right. Like, just solid. Like, eke out wins if you have to. If you're not feeling, you're playing 3-4, you're on the road or something, you're still winning those games. Like, those are the reps. Those are the games that you look at and say, we didn't have it tonight. We got it done because we went to our structure and we had this just stubborn attitude that we weren't going to try to open it up. We weren't going to do X, Y, and Z that might have worked in the past, but it could have cost. It's reps. They're playing a certain way, and you continue to play that way throughout because – every year, that's what wins. It's you might win a playoff series here and there. Different teams might surprise other teams in the playoffs, but ultimately, third and fourth round of the playoffs, the same thing wins. And it's goaltending, it's defense being hard to play against and not letting anyone near the middle of the ice in your end, and then getting to the middle of the ice in the offensive end. I think they have the guys to do all that.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And if you look through the season, who's at the top of the Pacific? The Golden Knights. Toronto beat them. Who's the talk of the league in the Western Conference? Winnipeg. It's cooled off a little bit recently, but still, like, they've got 18 wins and 4 losses. The first one they got handed to them was at the hands of the Toronto Maple Leafs. New Jersey Devils are at the top of the Metro. Who beat them? The Toronto Maple Leafs. An AHL goaltender right now in their organization in net. They drubbed the Tampa Bay Lightning, who are one of the challengers in their division. And it's kind of like, if you're going through it, it's like Carolina is left, and so are the Florida Panthers, who are sort of that measuring stick game. So to be coming out of, November, to be entering December, to have beaten all the best teams, essentially, in the NHL, to have this record, all to have it without Austin Matthews, and to be playing that style that you're talking about, it's hard not to be overly optimistic about the group. But I will say this, part of it, too, is that I feel like the East is not great. There's not a ton of teams that I'm like, wow, that's a terrifying group this season. The league feels a little bit more watered down, and that especially now comes with what's going on with the Rangers. And I will say, from the outside, as someone who doesn't watch all their games, when you just look at the record and you say, like, wait, okay, so they lost 3 straight, I get it, but still 12-7-1. And I know there's some discussion about how the schedule was light, but the schedule has been light for a lot of different teams who aren't 12-7-1. I guess, like, where are you at with this, like, the panic meter in New York right now? Because it seems really outsized for people outside of the market when you're reading things like they're talking about trading major pieces from the team. And again, it's still November.
Well, it's because of the expectations of the team. They were 6 wins away last year from winning the Stanley Cup. They've done 3 years ago, they were in the conference final again. So the expectations that are extremely high. And the way that they lost against Florida in the conference final, you know, obviously added some question marks, and they essentially came back with the same group. You had Riley Smith, and you hope that different players take a step. Well, Riley Smith's been fine, and I think, I mean, his centerman hasn't, so it's difficult, and they've shaken things up a little bit, but you'd think the younger guys take a step. You got a Zach Jones that's come in and played some decent hockey. You'd want Braden Schneider to take another step, and he did at the very beginning, and he's come back a little bit, but he's still a young player, young defenseman. And Will Cooley's been great, and Alexi Lafreniere's been great. But, you know, that line with Panarin, Trocheck, and Lafreniere the last few games, you know, Trocheck wasn't himself. And Mika Zibanejad has been, you know, a big issue right now this year because he has not found his game. And last year it started towards the second half of the year. And so it's been going on for a little bit longer. The way that they've played, even in their wins, hasn't been great. And they're giving up so many chances. It's really not. They started last year under Peter Laviolette with a tremendous structure. They changed a few things up. They wanted to be coached, and they were flying. But this year, there's a disconnect somewhere and an energy around the group they can't figure it out. So there's a lot of frustration right now. I think, you know, they lost a third period against St. Louis the other night. Was not good, but I give them a little bit of a pass just knowing how you feel when you come back from a place like Edmonton. You have a day between the game, and then you play, because I thought the first period was fine. They were pretty good, and then I think they literally just ran out of gas. So I expect, you know, it doesn't get easier for them. They play a lot of hockey in the next week or week and a half. But I expect certainly a pushback. And for them, yeah, they want to win a game to stop this losing streak. But I want to see how they play with their structure and what they're giving up, because they're giving up a tremendous amount. They're having real trouble just breaking the puck out. It doesn't look right. It's not like they're not scoring chances or aren't going in or they're hitting posts. They're just giving up a ton. So that's the biggest issue, you know, and they're 5-5 at home. They're 5-4-1 or something at home. You know, they've only won half their games they've played at home. So it's not really all those things put together are why there's kind of this feeling around the Rangers. And, you know, that's a noisy place to play too. It's like Toronto, but in the States. There's a lot of noise that goes around it, good, bad, or indifferent.
So about that noise, I was thinking about this last night when I was looking at some of the rumors, right? Because it's been floated out there, specifically Trouba and Kreider, and would Trouba waive the no move finally? Like, how can they make things, how can they switch up this room, and could a piece go out? And they've done something similar in Ottawa too, right? Where people are starting to talk about, hey, maybe it's time to move out a core piece. And again, it's late November, it's early December. We're a ways away from the NHL trade deadline when those things start to pick up, and the dynamic of a dressing room can change pretty dramatically, because guys are wondering where they're going to go and all of the things that come with it, whether it's family stuff or, you know, leaving a team that you still want to be a part of, a market, a house, whatever, a lifestyle, friends, all these different things that are real. But can there be a positive side to this? Like, when a team does this and it starts getting out where there are rumors, can it be a motivating factor for dudes to sort of get it together and basically have that warning shot fired across the bow? Or in your experience, is it usually something where it's like, no, if that shot has been fired, it's already too late and the changes are eventually going to happen?
I mean, I would look at it, if I'm in the room, it's the only way you can look at it is, let's show them they're wrong. Let's prove to them we are the group that we're supposed to be, and they don't want to screw this up. They don't want to mess with this. Because what's the other option if you're the player? You can't control any of that. And if you let that get to you, it's not going to help you as a player, and it's not going to help the team. You have to band together and show them. There's no other way to do it. You can't just say, oh, this guy wants to trade me anyway, so, like, why am I going to play well? How are we going to – you can't go rogue. You can't go on your own page. It's an opportunity to band together and say, let's show them. That's the only option you have is the player. I mean, it's a business. You have to play well. That's part of the deal. You want to play? You want to continue the way things are going? You got to play well. This isn't youth sports. This isn't even college. Which is turning more into a business now. You got to play well. If you don't play well, you're gone. That's how it is. That's life, buddy. Like, And so here's your chance. When it's not going well, how deep can you dig and show us? And if they do, I think they're going to come together as a group, you know, tighter than ever. And once you get over that, you get a little hardened by a little adversity, they'd be a dangerous team.
I like and believe in everything you just said. And I actually don't think that there is enough of it, or I just shouldn't say that, but yeah, I don't like that sometimes we seem to be trending away from that kind of mindset and that kind of opinion when it comes to the way that these things are handled. Anyways, Brian Boyle, it's always fun to get to chat with you, buddy. Thanks so much for making time. Enjoy the game tonight.
You as well. Go Leafs.
Yeah, I will be. I will be. Go Leafs. Brian Boyle, former NHL forward, NHL Network, and up in the blue seats. Okay, I want to dig into a little bit what he said about them as contenders and why this year is different. Again, you can, just like with the Ben and I doing Blue Jays offseason stuff, I'm fully prepared to put the clown makeup on. I wasn't really going to do this now because it is November, and I obviously want more of a sample of what's going on with the league, but I'm feeling fairly optimistic about this year's team. Granted, I did also feel overly exuberant about the deadline that he discussed that he didn't really like, where Dubas swapped out essentially six players, brought in essentially half of a new team at the trade deadline. Now, they did win a playoff round that year, which by their standards is unbelievable considering the amount of times that they've had a crack at it. But I genuinely do believe that this is a very Leafs-y year. And I'm not saying they're going to win the Stanley Cup. I'm not even saying they're going to the Stanley Cup. But I have a lot more faith in this group than I have in other iterations. And I am far more engaged and interested in the November schedule than I thought I would be, and especially compared to years past. Number one is the coaching. I'm sorry. Like, it is different. Like, they are – Sheldon Keefe always wanted to have this team play defensively responsible. Like, that matters. But I just do think that the new voice in the room, having someone that is there that is different preaching that message, is resonating with them. Like, you just see the way that they're playing night in, night out, and they look like a playoff hockey team. And Brian's right. They don't need to score a ton of goals to win hockey games. And a big part of that, too, is, number two, the goaltending. They have not had goaltending that is this good in a very, very, very long time. Like, this is unprecedented in the salary cap era for the Toronto Maple Leafs, what they've potentially got here in Joe Woll and Anthony Stolarz. And yes, there are injury concerns, and yes, there are potential regression concerns with Stolarz, although I'm frankly not really believing them. Like, I think that the numbers might dip a little, but that this guy's a really good goaltender, and he's taken his opportunity and running with it. The goaltending is just flat out something that you can really believe in. Like, look across the ice tonight with the Florida Panthers. How could you not feel like this part of the series is leveled up, that this part of that potential matchup is far more even than what you had when they bounced you in embarrassing fashion in the postseason a couple of years ago? So, like, if you're actually going to point to anything I'm most optimistic about, like, it's that. Like, that is the biggest reason for potential change, is that you've got two guys in net who might both be true blue studs. Number three is you do have a real shutdown pairing. Like, not trying to cobble that together going into the deadline, not trying to figure out who's going to work with Morgan Rielly and can you find him a guy. It's like, Morgan Riley's properly slotted. He's a really good number three on this team. Like, that's it. You've got a shutdown pairing that's not going to provide you with a world of offense, but isn't going to make a ton of mistakes. And McCabe can jump up in the rush a little bit. Tanev's a smart player. That pairing works. You've really solidified that with your team. That, like, look at their numbers when they're on the ice. If you're able to ever check out the fancy stats, it's like they're dominant. They control, like, the shot share, the goals, expected goals. All those things are just unbelievably in those guys' favor. They have been terrific to start this season. And so while you're still leaning on the Connor Timmonses and you're hoping that that doesn't change for you too materially, and hey, maybe Benoit hasn't been totally himself, like, that Benoit's not the number four anymore. He's the 6'7". Connor Timmons is playing extremely well. He might get pushed out because they do see a defenseman that they like for more depth come deadline time, which is going to be a little bit more easy to acquire. They've got really one meaningful hole on the roster, and that's center. But the hole is not in part due to John Tavares. He's been great. People who are afraid of Tavares' aging curve and, oh, shit, when's he going to get kicked out of the wing? Like, man, people were doing, like, smart people, like, awesome people were doing Tavares to the wing a couple of seasons ago, and here he is, like, leading the league essentially in puck battle wins, a point-a-game player, fighting for teammates, playing great with Mitch Marner. Again, it's November. I get it. I can only do what I have that is in front of me. But Tavares is not a concern for you up the middle right now. You're going to get Austin Matthews back, presumably healthy, because, God, he's taken this long, and he's even talking about how, like, the way he was not like, I'm dying to get back in line, I'm going to do everything. He's being smart about it. Maybe even overly cautious about it. But, yeah, maybe you don't even see him tonight, but it's weeks off in the middle of the season for a guy that has worn down a couple of times. Maybe it is a good thing. Maybe the Joel Embiid treatment, the Kawhi treatment is going to work for Austin Matthews, but you don't have any questions about really who he is. So you've got those top two guys the way that you kind of expected them to be, looking the way that you expect them to be. That's great. Marner looks like he's entering his prime, like his true blue prime, looks like a bit of a different guy. And I know, again, the skepticism around him in the postseason is totally fair and warranted. Nylander is able to drive his own line. Like, your star guys that you've invested the money in are all looking like they're providing you with return on the dollar. Matthew Nyes has emerged. Like, that kid is a genuine beast, and he's going to be a handful in the postseason as well. Like, that's a real player. McMahon, with his size, looks like he's a guy that can play up the lineup. There are depth questions with this team to figure out, but that's a hell of a lot better than anything else that I just outlined that you could have had. Like, looking for a number one defenseman again. Oh, my God, they need to get a right shot guy. Like, that's solved. You're talking about adding a winger, maybe somebody who could pop a puck in the back of the net. Like, we got the biggest first world problems going right now doing these discussions about, like, Nick Robertson. Who cares? Like, flip him for a third. Flip him for a fourth. Who cares? He's not playing on the playoff roster. He's here, like, basically doing, is the trade stock going to go up or go down? These are the luxury items that we're talking about that are basically nitpicked with. Max Domi, he's going to get come back. He's going to get a chance to play with Austin Matthews. He's not this team's 3C. They're not going to go into the playoffs with this opportunity to win and have Max Domi be the third line center. Like, we're figuring this out, okay? But we have seen him play well with Austin Matthews, and I'm sure that the tough start he's had to the season is going to turn into a month stretch where people go, like, this is a guy that you had as an F to start the year. I'm going to go, yeah, great. Always believed in the guy up the lineup playing with talent. Think it's going to work out for him. Really do. What else? Eastern Conference. All of a sudden, the Bruins don't seem as bad. Tampa doesn't seem as bad. Tampa's good. Like, they're fine. They're 11-7. Like, you know, they deserve respect. I think they've got 7 wins in their last 10 games. Like, solid team, but this certainly doesn't feel like years prior, where especially the early iterations of this, where it was like, hey, man, they're like a total juggernaut. Vasilevsky's back, but Toronto's pretty confident against that guy. Anyways, the top of the Metro is New Jersey and Carolina. Do you really feel like you couldn't win a series against those two teams? Like, the Rangers, we just talked about with Brian, are spiraling out. The Capitals are in a playoff spot right now, and I mean, the idea that someone would fear the Capitals in a playoff series to me is crazy. Like, that's nuts. And then the part that I was trying to communicate to Brian about being first in the Atlantic and actually trying to finish first in the Eastern Conference, hell, like, I don't really want the Leafs to try to burn out winning regular season games in a way where it's like they've got some type of millstone around their necks when it comes to chasing a record, or, you know, like the Tampa year where they were trying to chase. It's like, that's not what they're doing here. That's not the point I'm making. But for them to have something to play for in the regular season, to stay a little bit more engaged and consistent, to me is just a good thing. You're not going to be entering February, early February this year, saying, oh yeah, well, who cares? You're playing the Bruins in round one and you're going to be on the road. Like, that's what it's been. And I know how it feels as someone who comments about the team. I can't imagine how it feels as a player of the team, knowing, like, you're going through months of basically trying to stay healthy, go through the motions, preparing yourself like psychologically for just another matchup with the Boston Bruins in the first round. You have an opportunity to get something different. You have an opportunity to win home ice, to finish first in the Atlantic, host playoff games, and not start your postseason playing the Bruins or the Lightning. That means something to me. It does. Even if some of it is subconscious, and even if none of those players would admit it, to me, that matters with this group. So it's, again, you go through the checklist. What is better this season so far? Not taking a shot at Sheldon Keefe, but just think that this was the right time to move on. Different voice, different guy, different style. Good thing. Coaching better. Goaltending, unquestionably better. Blue line, unquestionably better. Stars playing up to their potential with one guy missing in Austin Matthews, who is basically the one that you probably feel the best about out of any of them if they were ever going through a slump, given what his track record is. A clear point to address come deadline time, and a regular season with a more watered down conference when it comes to contenders, at least now in early December, late November, and something to stay engaged with when it comes to the standings, and a far greater opportunity this season to actually finish first in the standings and not just remain in that ugly two or three hole. So yeah, you can't reasonably tell me with all those things in mind that it's the exact same as years prior. Okay. When we're doing same old Leafs, which we've done over and over and over again. And like, am I Mr. Sunshines and Rainbows with this team? Like, I know I can be a little bit of a weather vane. Like we all are. Like, I know I got my flaws as a broadcaster and as a commentator on this team. I haven't nailed every single thing. I'm not perfect. I know that some of this is definitely market optimism. Like, there's a piece of it. But I have done same old Leafs. I have felt that way year over year. I certainly felt that way last season throughout the very beginning of it, like throughout the highs and lows. It was fun doing the Sweden trip, but throughout most of that regular season, I never felt the way about that group that I feel already about this one. There's just more reasons to believe that they are who they are showing people to be. Again, the team that has beaten the Bruins, beaten the Devils, beaten the Jets, beaten the Golden Knights. A lot of good teams that they've racked up wins with, and we've kind of just gone through it and been, all right, what's going on with the power play? And, oh, excited about the new, so, like, Stolarz's play, and, oh, now we're doing the Mitch Marner contract thing. And meanwhile, slowly but surely, this team has just been racking up wins and proven that there are reasons to believe in them. Anyways, we're going to take a break, but before we do that, my God, the 50-50 fortune is now up over $275,000. So yeah, everybody that's listening to this, you're basically like in on something that like is a fairly large size lottery that fan listeners, Sportsnet listeners are getting kind of access to. So who wants to win a bunch of cash while doing the best thing this holiday? It's Sportsnet 590, the Fan's 50-50 fortune supporting food for kids. Here's what you need to know. We've created a 50-50 lottery where the more money we raise, the more kids we can feed in the GTA, and the more you can win. The current take-home prize, as I just mentioned, is $275,000. It's actually over that now. And someone is going to win that jackpot on Thursday, December 19th. If you get your tickets early, there are more amazing prizes, early bird prizes, including two sports packages, one with a signed Nylander jersey and a pair of tickets to a Leafs game, and one that is a couple of tickets to a Jays game and a signed George Springer jersey. Get your tickets by December 6th. So it's coming up. So get it in. December 6th at 9 a.m. for your chance to win. For more details and to buy your tickets, go to foodforkids5050.ca or easy peasy. Text the word cash to 590-590 and we'll send the link right to your phone. It's the 50-50 fortune supporting food for kids. Standard message and data rate supply. Quick break. We'll come back and the Dodgers, what we missed.
Sportsnet 590, the Fan.
So I spoke the Daniel Jones signing into existence, according to Adam Schefter. He's signing with the Giants, or the Vikings. Giants. He signed back with the Giants. Signed with the Vikings. And you know what? I don't care. I really don't care. I do not care. Yeah, good for him, I guess. Like, if Sam Darnold gets hurt, they're done for. He's not stepping into that Minnesota team and doing any much of anything with it. I kind of get it from his standpoint. It's like, okay, he's playing behind a guy that I guess does have some question marks about him still, because he is Sam Darnold. And if there was to be an opportunity for him to play, he gets to throw the ball to Justin Jefferson and TJ Hockenson. And that feels pretty good. And you're there with a really good offensive coach. Like, there's a lot of good reasons for him to try to rehabilitate his career there, but that's really all I have to say about it, because it's Daniel Jones. And I really do not think that you will be hearing from him in meaningful ways moving forward, that this is very much like a Carson Wentz situation where you're really aware of the name, but he is a backup that you never want to see play. Fair. Okay. Let's move on. Mike Jose, what did we miss?
All right. Two-time Cy Young winner Blake Snell and the Dodgers, yeah, shocker, surprise, surprise, agreed to a $182 million five-year contract, according to someone with direct knowledge of the negotiations. So he'll join Shohei Ohtani and Yamamoto atop that rotation. He's $36.4 million average salary, would rank him as the fifth highest among active deals next year, just behind Ohtani and Zach Wheeler, Aaron Judge and DeGrom.
So I'm still not really clear on what the prospect is of Shohei Ohtani pitching again. Like,
I don't think he needs to.
Well, but I've seen things where people are like, oh, he is going to pitch. I've seen stuff where it's like, no, he's not. And he understands like where he is in his career. So like, oh, we'll just see. But even without Ohtani at the top of the rotation, which is like a massive, which is normally for any team, a huge, huge, huge difference having one of the better pitchers in all of baseball potentially pitch for you. They would have Yamamoto, Snell, Glasnow, and then Miller, May, and Gonsolin without doing any other signings right now, which is insane. This is the point I was making when we were talking about this team with, who was it? I think Trevor May, where I was trying to make the point like, hey, man, the Dodgers are, I don't think, bad for baseball. Because having good teams that you care about, that matters, and that's totally fine. That's good. Like, what's better, having Blake Snell sign with, like, the San Francisco Giants again, and we never really see Blake Snell? Like, I don't care about that. Would I rather have Blake Snell on the Blue Jays? Absolutely. But if not, then why do I really care if he's a Dodger? Makes them more interesting, and I think that having juggernauts is great. This isn't a basketball. The only place where I really ever felt like having a – like a real juggernaut dynasty team was not great for the sport was the Warriors, but it was because it was Kevin Durant adding them. I never had any problems with it before then. Like, I wasn't like, oh no, not the Warriors. When Kevin Durant joined them, a 73 win team, it just felt like stacking the deck in a way that we hadn't seen that done. We had not seen like a championship caliber team, championship winning team, 73 win team. Well, we didn't see any 73 win teams, but like, it felt gross. It felt bad. Nobody liked it. I like dynasties. I like juggernauts. I like a team that feels like every time they're in town, you got to try and beat them, and that you could have a regular season series where you beat them, and it feels massive. So to me, the Dodgers are good for baseball, except one tiny little part of this, which is the deferred money in which Blake Snell has agreed to take in this deal. And as far as I have seen, it has not been reported how much it is. He's still got a big signing bonus. This is not the Shohei deal where it's like all of it is buried and the Dodgers have to pay this thing out in 2036 or whatever. But I will say that it's always fine when the competitive advantage is like, yeah, we have money. It feels a little ickier when it's like guys are taking the deferred cash and they're kind of changing the game on that a little bit when you don't feel like there's anything you can do with that. Like, that does suck a little bit. That is a little annoying because the Blue Jays will go up and try to match dollar for dollar. And you feel like, okay, good. Try to do that. Build a good baseball team, because if you're competitive, someone will want to come play for you and someone will want to, someone will want to play with a quality team where you're getting a ton of cash and the cash is all up front. But no, the deferred dollars thing is very much an LA market, LA Dodgers, World Series champs thing. That's not going to be everywhere else. And I know that a lot of guys aren't going to take that. Like Juan Soto's not taking the deferred money or whatever, but I'm going to keep my ability to be slightly annoyed by the Dodgers signing guys using that weapon when I don't think that weapon applies to so many other teams. And you're granted, you could make the case like, well, Toronto doesn't have Miami's weather. They can never do that. So some teams using it, it's like, okay, yeah, but just when you have the most money and you have, coming off the World Series, you're just allowed to be a little bit more hateable. But overall, Blake Snell going to the Dodgers to me is not bad for baseball. This is not, I am not going to be crying about this, them signing free agents. They go, you build a great baseball team, you get aggressive with your cash, you get aggressive in trades like the Mookie Betts one. Everybody should want to be a Dodgers fan. Everybody should want to be a fan of a team that tries to build up their farm system, spends cash, makes a great culture for their players, and then is still never satisfied with what they're doing. Like, I'm never going to push back against that, especially in the realities of the hard salary cap world that we see in the NHL, where these teams are punished for being good, and the shelf lives of these good teams can be so short for them being great and interesting, and very, very quickly, they can turn quite boring. Like, there's a lot of quality teams in the NHL, quality, I don't say great, quality teams that I don't really have all that much interest in watching, whereas I will want to watch the Dodgers. So good for baseball, good for the Dodgers, good for Blake Snell. What's next?
All right, so there's been some discussion about the San Francisco 49ers, who are currently last in the NFC West with a 5-6 record. Well, yeah, you probably love it. But Debo Samuel went on his podcast to defend Kyle Shanahan from a bunch of more discourse, I suppose, on the internet, if he should be fired. So he said, Super Bowl, NFC Championship, year after that, NFC Championship again. Last year, Super Bowl. Why are you saying he's on the hot seat? You could harp on everybody being injured. At the end of the day, that's part of the game. You can't show me a losing season since I've been here. At the end of the day, we're 5-6 right now, but we got games left. He's the smartest coach you could ask for. Yada, yada, yada. Anyway, is Shanahan on the hot seat?
No, this is the dumbest thing ever that has ever been presented here. Like, I don't even know where this is coming from. I'm pretty plugged into the NFL, and I've not seen any of this. I'm guessing that this is like Niners Twitter, and some of it's bleeding into his mentions, and he's offended at the notion of it. Like, Niners fans can tell me if I'm wrong. Like, you can reach out at JD Bunkus anytime and show me that there is really strong evidence of a lot of Niners fans pushing for the firing of Kyle Shanahan. But, like, no. One, they already did this like a few years ago, the Niners fans, where they were like, oh, is it time for Shanahan to go? And then it was like, actually, no, he's one of the most valuable coaches in the NFL, which he absolutely is. Like, I'm really excited about the Seahawks coach, Mike McDonald. The last 3 weeks, he's completely shut down opponents. The blitz packages are creative. He is just getting a lot now out of some of the defensive players. He's going to mold this team around him. I would 100% swap him out without even a moment's hesitation to get Kyle Shanahan in to be the coach of the Seahawks. And this is as optimistic as I've felt about a coach, like, I don't know, maybe like since Pete Carroll first came to Seattle. Like, Kyle Shanahan is one of the best coaches in the NFL. That's established. You don't let those guys walk. And some people might be making like the Andy Reid case where you go, well, maybe you should, like, no, was it smart of the Eagles to let Andy Reid go? Like, I don't think so. I don't think that that's like, it played out well. So no, I think this is a player defending his coach, but yeah, the Niners season to me is very clear. It's a season from hell. They had a ton of injuries. They're probably exhausted by all of these runs that they've had. Everything has gone poorly all at once. Basically, they started the season without Christian McCaffrey, who was their MVP last year for like the first, what, 8-9 weeks. So no, the Niners, I would be hoping for just like the hard reboot next year where you're like, okay, maybe this isn't our year, but we get a good draft pick and everybody comes back healthy. And then you try it again next year with Kyle Shanahan, obviously. So yeah, extremely, extremely, extremely dumb fan behavior if you're calling for that guy's job. Anyways, we're done for today, but I'm back tonight with Leafs Talk. Subscribe and review to this pod. Do those things. Leave nice ones because I had that frozen screen I mentioned off the top of the show. And then tomorrow, we got obviously our day with Myrtle, and I can't remember who else we have, but it's a good, oh yeah, we have Sid Sixero. So it's a good show tomorrow. See you then.